continuing American massacre. The name Haditha has emerged as a place of death, of carnage, of mass murder, of the latest American massacre. The news that U.S. soldiers went into the Sunni town and, after attacked by IEDs, proceeded to slaughter several dozen men, women, and children, all of whom were unarmed Iraqi civilians, is going around the world at the speed of light. The Haditha massacre happened in late November 2005, and the Army's response is sensitivity training. We've come a long way from the days of the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, where U.S. Army troops slaughtered hundreds of defenseless villagers, old men, women, babies, even animals. Instead of hundreds, it's now dozens. That's a kind of progress, isn't it? And yet, massacres have a way of clarifying things, of showing us the naked, deadly truths that we all seem to ignore when immersed in the fog of war. My Lai revealed that the U.S. didn't go to Vietnam to save them from communism. They went to force them to their knees, to bow to their new colonial masters. Americans went because the French were exhausted after their losses at a place called Diem Ben Phu and wanted to replace them. Haditha, although smaller in scale, is also a clarity bursting through fog. The U.S. didn't go to Iraq to liberate them from a brutal dictatorship. They came to install their own puppets, to install their own dictator, one who answered to them. But to be honest, the entire war was a massacre. According to the British medical journal The Lancet, some 100,000 Iraqis were killed by U.S. bombing and military action. The Lancet's estimate is thought to be quite conservative. What unites these two wars, despite the distance of time and space, is the central theme of race. Vietnamese, called Buks by American soldiers, were seen as less than human. Iraqis, as Arabs, are seen as wogs by the British, and sand niggers by Americans. Haditha, for all of its horror, pain, and loss, is but the tip of the iceberg. The U.S. occupation is an act of violence that draws on the hated history of colonialism. Since the Iraq invasion, we have seen disaster after disaster after disaster. Haditha is but an echo of Abu Ghraib, both gifts of the same sadistic Santa Claus, whose bag is filled to the brim with poison. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Yes, and this is Ross Danny. I'm sitting in for Reggae Bob for a few minutes until he shows up. And this is Prison Pipeline here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Seems like they forgot about me. Commissary is getting empty. gang cellmates eating food without me. Can't wait to get out and move forward with my life. Got a family that loves me and wants me to do right. But still I'm here locked up.
They won't let me out. They won't let go.
I'm locked up.
They won't let me out. No. They won't let me out.
My nigga, I'm locked up.
With a track from his CD, Trouble, Locked Up. Yeah, Bob, Reggae Bob left a few things for me to impart to you. And first off, I want to start with the Western Prison Project.org spotlight. The Western Prison Project exists to coordinate a progressive response to the criminal justice system and to build a grassroots multiracial movement that achieves criminal justice reform and reduces the over-reliance on incarceration in the western states of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, Utah, Wyoming, and Nevada. And they've sent out some calls for submissions to cover A Day in the Life. And these are sent out to brethren and sister in lockdown in the prisons and the penitentiaries around the area. And they want you to let them know three things: your name and the best way to reach you, mail, phone, or email. Wait a minute. Day in the Life can cover anything you want to share about the reality of surviving prison or surviving an act of violence or crime. Priority is given to justice matters, readers, and subscribers. Justice Matters readers are invited to tell us about one day in your life as a prisoner, a survivor of violence or crime, or as a family member of a prisoner or crime survivor or crime victim. Please send 500 words or less. If you are handwriting on lined paper, that's the front and back of a page at the most. Please type or write neatly. Focus on one day or incident or a 24-hour period. Include the date and tell us what you do, what you see, smell, hear. Make the experience real for our readers and, of course, for our listeners. Let us know three things when you submit. Your name and the best way to reach you, mail, phone, or email. Do we have your permission to edit, yes or no? You can ask us not to edit, but that makes it much less likely that we will be able to use it. It is okay to publish on our website, yes or no? And you can submit to A Day in the Life, WPP, P.O. Box 40085, Portland, Oregon, 97240. I'm going to start with one day in the life. It's called My Filling Came Out. This is from December 20th, 2005, as written by C.H. in prison in Oregon. Right before Christmas, I had a filling in my molar come out. Back in 1996, I was stabbed in the cheek. The knife went through my rear upper jaw, separated the gum off my back tooth, and laid the roof of my mouth open to the gum on the other side. The dentist told me he couldn't put stitches in my mouth to sew the gum back on, so he pulled out my top back molar. So I'm already one molar short on that side. They have a top-of-the-line dental office here. Four stations with everything a dentist could want or need. It takes 6 months to a year to see a dentist here. Then they reschedule you for months later until it's too late, and they have to pull your tooth. This day I got lucky, and my unit officer called dental and got me in on an emergency. As busy as they must be, they fit me in. I got in, and I was the only inmate there. Two dentists sat reading a magazine while one assistant took x-rays. Three assistants sat chatting and drank coffee. Finally, the dentist looked at the tooth and the x-ray and told me I needed a root canal. But the Department of Corrections policy won't allow them to do root canals. All he can do is pull it out. He tells me if I have $700 for a root canal and $250 for transport, I can go to the dentist in town and get my tooth finished. But it needs to be done right away. I don't have an extra $1,000 on my books, and this guy talks me into letting him pull my tooth. One of them got up from the magazine to numb me with a shot and sat back down with the other dentists. Then the dentist pulls my tooth. I look at the tooth, and yes, there was a hole there where the filling had been. But it didn't look bad. The dentist sits back down with his buddy to discuss whatever it was in the magazine. On my way out, I noticed that there were no inmates waiting to see the dentist in the waiting room. Now I'm missing both molars on the top left side, so eating is a whole new experience. It's bad enough to get out. To get out and be an ex-con, but to get out and be an ex-con with no teeth really sucks.
Thank you. Good evening. Reggae Bob back in the seat, back in the house with Ross Danny doing Prison Pipeline today. Good to be back as usual. And this show, we continue to do it as Ann Rose Pierce would have liked us to do so. And we share the airs with our Ruth Kovich, writer and activist. Glad to have her on. She was on last week. Back next week. And Ross Danny, he's going to read one more of the A Day in the Life Of that we got from the Western Prison Project. Wonderful, wonderful project here in town.
Yes, thank you, Bob. This is A Day in the Life Of. Well, it says, oh, KS, in prison in Washington State, my third day at Walla Walla Prison. I was sentenced to 38 months. I was classified as medium, and I was on my way to Walla Walla Prison, medium custody. We stopped in the Sallyport of closed custody when they called my number to the front of the bus. I was shaking all the way inside and asked what was happening. The officer told me to shut my mouth and ask once I get to my unit. They took my belly chains off and told me to go directly to X-Wing. When I stepped out of the main line, I looked up, and in one tower, an officer stood with a gun. That scared me poopless. Let's say that.
Okay, that'll work.
I went to my cell, and it had three other cellies already in there. They were cool. 2 days later, I went in front of the committee, and they made me get buck naked to look for scars and tattoos. They asked me if I was in a hood or if I was a racist. They told me I was going to be inside the closed custody for a little while because this guy put lies out about me in medium. They told me my new housing will be X-Wing, dog X top bunk. I got over there with my mattress and linen, and the officer, I walked in, put my stuff down, and the gates shut. Three of my cellies stood up and asked what I was doing. I said, this is where I live for a little while, and they told me, no, it's not. I didn't know what to say. They told me that when it was dinner, that I will not lock down. We went to dinner, and after I got done, I locked down. When my cellies came back, they asked what I was doing. I responded that the cops told me to lock down. They didn't like that, and they said I had until lockdown to be out of my cell or else. They did count, and I was lying down on my bunk when one of my cellies told me to put my shoes on and get down. I got down and told him that I didn't want to fight. He said, okay, and as I started to turn, he socked me in the mouth. Then he came at me again and knocked me to the ground. I got up and rushed him, grabbing his ponytail while trying to smash his head into the bars. I got kicked in the head by a pair of boots and blacked out. The cops were walking and caught them stomping me out and kicking me. All three of them stomped me a new butthole. I got three broken ribs, broken nose, four teeth kicked in, and my left wrist broken. I was in the hospital for almost 10 months. Now I am back.
Good gosh. Good gosh. This is the reform system. This is where they put us, get you in jail, supposed to reform you, and bring you out a better citizen.
Man, you haven't even got a chance if you get a welcoming like that.
Good gosh almighty. Hope the person's doing fine. Each of those are dated pretty recently, not more than 2 years old, none of those.
That
right
one
there.
Was March 15th, 2004.
See, just like that. Oh my gosh. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. And I want to thank Ross Danny ahead of time. I asked him to come in, and I was going to interview him. Mr. Ross Danny. Mr. Ross Danny, we're going to go into it right now, Prison Pipeline style. And we do this, we're doing the Prison Pipeline show. This is a show is to help people, to help other people who are in situations such as this and such as Ross Danny used to be in. And by listening to these stories and testimony, help hopefully will help some of the inmates get through their personal endeavors. And right now I'm going to say, Ross Danny, I might be pushing our friendship. So if I if I say, just shake your head, don't throw nothing and hit me. So here we go. Ross Danny, we interview our good friend Ross Danny. Ross Danny, your prison stint or stints, what... I know you were in for one time, quite a long spell the last time. Could you tell us a little bit of your history?
My history goes way back. The first time I got thrown into prison, actually it was a jail, but it was like a prison for me because I was very, very young, 16 years old, you know. And that was in Chicago, a place called, Cook County Jail.
Hey.
Terrible place. Scared the crap out of me, but it didn't scare me enough, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because anyways, in 1990, I was still leading a life of ill intent.
Were you a salesman?
I was a salesman.
Okay.
A salesman of, well,
things.
Anyways, things yeah. And I got busted in Hawaii and sentenced to 12-year sentence, of which the judge said he wanted to see me do... Actually, he told me he wanted to see me do at least 10 years in prison, so he sentenced me to 12 years because then with good time I'd get 10 years and 5 months or something like that.
Whoa.
And so
ouch.
This was federal territory. I was shipped to, luckily I had a judge that was considerate, and the system followed his cue and sent me to a place that was near my family, which happened to be here in Oregon.
Oh.
Sheridan Federal
prison.
What's it called?
Yam Hill.
It's federal prison system in Sheridan.
McMinnville?
I can't remember what it was called anymore.
Okay.
I'm trying not to remember. You know?
I know, man. It's been blacked out for
anyways,
quite a while.
I did spend 9 years. 9 months and 23 days or something like that in there.
Okay.
And it was close enough to 10 years that you could probably call it that.
I would. You get 10 years in my book for bad behavior. For that behavior, I should say. And after that last stint, and you said you didn't learn earlier, did you think you wouldn't get caught? Did you think that the things you were doing, that you were slippery sliding up, that it's not going to happen.
Every time you do a little bit of time and you go inside and you reinforce these thoughts, these feelings about yourself that you've learned a lesson, and that the next time you go out there and if you have to go back to what you were doing, which is inevitable because you aren't learning anything else in there to train yourself to change. Unless you really knuckle down and do it and take advantage of some of the system, some of the programs that are in there, then you come out and you say everything's cool and I know how to do it this time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you start out, you know, and then you start out with good intentions and anyways, but
yeah, surviving, gotta survive. That's just one thing. I got so many questions here. We got limited time. We're going to keep it down here. Thanks for the phone call. We weren't expecting calls. We might talk to you off the air. We'll leave it up to Ross Danny. And when you got that last one, that big 12-year stint, actually almost exactly 10, were there others involved in the gig? And, you know,
another guy involved, and he got a little bit of time, and that had some of the effect on why the judge gave me a lesser sentenced than the 19 years that I was eligible for at the time. And because the guy that was involved with me got a much lesser time, the judge said he didn't feel comfortable about giving me a whole lot of time, so he was just going to give me 10 years.
Oh, well, yeah. Hey,
anyways, you know, there's something I have to say about the whole experience, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the opportunity to take advantage of a program in there, a drug counseling behavioral modification type thing, and it's not about they change you or something. They just give you the opportunity to go to a bunch of different classes where you can learn things that you could put to good use in your life. And if you keep practicing them over and over again, it's like learning how to ride a new kind of bicycle over again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You just do it a different way, and you just keep doing it over and over again, and it becomes part of your life. And having a 6-year tail when I got out, they call it supervised release, but it was nothing more than probation. I'd missed so much time out of my children's lives. I missed seeing my grandson being born, my first grandson being born. You know, things like that, they sink home with you, you know, and you realize it's time to either if this is the life you want to live, living in prison, then you can just go about the way you've been always been doing things, you know. But if you really want to change, you just have to go, you know, follow the plot that's laid out for you and be serious about it.
Yeah, if there's any way to take advantage of some of those programs, are they lessen your time? Yeah, we've got about 2 minutes to go.
Actually, in the federal system, yes, we were able to lessen our time by a year if we didn't have any violent crimes on our record. The program was still eligible to people who had violent crimes on their record, but they weren't eligible for the year off after the completion of the 500-hour comprehensive program.
Yeah, I've been to some parole board hearings. I'm still putting a big story together about that, sitting in Salem in the office listening to some of the probation hearings, and it's wild down there. As people just getting ripped off left and right.
I want to pay respect to one man who was a staff member when I first showed up there. And he's no longer with the prison system, but he's still helping brothers and sisters out in the community. His name is Omar Hakim, and he is a very righteous man. He worked in the Unicor, keeping their computer system together, and he was also a sponsor, the staff sponsor for the African American Culture Group, of which I was a member of. And this brother put his life on the line in there for people. Matter of fact, he was forced out of the system because he loved his brothers so much, and where they were taking their lives, that They found a way to extinguish his employment with them.
Right on, Omar. Big up to you. And big up to all the fathers who are on lockdown. Father's Day is coming up. Fathers never get as much love as the mothers. And that's by design, because the kids come from the mamas. But daddies, you're out there. And big up to you. Stay strong. And it's the fastest half hour on the radio. You're done.
Hey, enough respect to all fathers that be fathers.
Yeah, that beef out. And Ross Danny, how about closing remarks? You know, because you've been out for quite a while now, and I don't think you're ever going back. What do you give some of your strength to that, you know, is keeping you good and going,
well,
keeping them from slipping up and getting you back in there as they tried to do?
A lot of it was my leaning towards the spirituality of Rastafari. The brethren that I met there who were into the Rasta faith and the way of life gave me enough inspiration to, you know, just live good, live clean. Let your works be seen, as Peter Tosh would say, you know. Go out, do good works.
True.
And do good works in your own mind, you know. If it starts inside of you, in your mind, do good works with your mind. And your body will follow, you know.
Free your mind, and you will follow. Ross Danny, good to have you here, man. I think we're still friends. We're doing okay. And
yeah, man.
Remains to be seen.
Let's close out with this Nyora track one more time.
One little sec. It is 7 o'clock. We're out of here.
Next is Clemmie's Groove.
Community calendar's coming up. Yep. But let you know, 9 o'clock. Sister E is on out of town for a little bit, and Reggae Bob's gonna be on 9 o'clock.
Oh, really?
A little bit of fun. A little bit of fun. So, Prison Pipeline, big series show.
Reggae Bob E.
Big up strong again, and it's gonna be Ruth Kovish will be back next week at 6:30. Thank you for listening.
Big up to K-Boo.
I can't reach the button. You got it.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know how many youths in jail? How many black men? This is what an inmate told me. The Most High's will to have me where I am. Let them see that they can't kill the inner God of man. Even though the cell is locked and they've thrown away the key, I'm the finest of the Father's crop. I deserve to be happy. I'm just saying, down, somebody's down in the concrete jail cell, and nobody. nobody gives a damn, 'cause most of them are black. Down some